In the small town of Dera in southern Syria, 7 years ago today, people took to the streets. The winds of the Arab Spring were blowing across the Middle East, and people in Dera wanted their rights. There was hope and even some joy in those days as people were anticipating change. We know now what the Syrian conflict has become, a civil war that's killed an estimated 500,000 people and displaced 11 million. But it didn't start that way.
It wasn't really a war. It started out as the demonstrations just to improve the standard of living. Nobody wanted a war. They were just demonstrating in the street to hopefully improve things in Syria. They turned it into a war.
Muna is from Damascus. She left with her family after living through a year of the fighting. They arrived in the United States last January and asked that we not use their last name to protect their family members who are still in Syria. When Muna says they turned it into a war, she's referring to the regime of President Bashar al-Assad, an ophthalmologist whose father ruled Syria for nearly three decades until 2000.
The whole war started when children wrote on the wall, "Your turn, doctor." The Secret Service arrested them and he beat them up. And that's how the whole thing started.
That's Muna's husband, Hussein, talking about what many Syrians consider the start of the civil war. A group of teenagers in the city of Dera wrote pro-revolution graffiti on some concrete walls. But on the seventh anniversary of those protests in Syria, we wanted to tell the story of those early days before demonstration turned to bloodshed. It's a time that Rula Amin remembers well. Today, Amin is a senior spokesperson at the UN Refugee Agency for the Middle East and North Africa. In 2011, she was working as a journalist in Beirut, and she traveled to Damascus and to Dera right as the first protests got started.
It was a very unfamiliar scene in Syria because you had these thousands of people on the streets, very defiant, very empowered, calling for freedoms, calling for more democracy, calling for an end to corruption, calling for having a more say in their lives. And it was so unfamiliar to see these people on the streets in Syria.
Was there any response from the government at the time, even if it was lip service, to say, yes, we can talk about some of these grievances, just go back to your homes and we'll have a conversation? Did anything like that go on at first?
Well, you know, it's with Syria, there's always two narratives. If you talk to the opposition, they will say the government just crushed their initial protest, and that's what led to the armed conflict. And if you talk to people who are more supportive of the government, they would say the government was engaging and that they promised some changes, but it was not enough because regional powers were meddling with Syria and there were other drivers and people were being paid to do this. But I have to say, at that first week, at those first 2 weeks, people still had hopes that the Syrian president would stand actually by them, that he would actually meet their demands. And that's why most of the slogans we were hearing then were not directed against him as much as the people around him, the security elite. They had hopes that with these protests, they will be able to bring change to Syria.
And people in the streets, it seems to me, Rula, might have looked, as you said, to Tunisia. They might have looked to Cairo. They might have looked to other places around the Arab world and thought that their president, Bashar al-Assad, might want to respond because there was tension all over the region.
Yes, people had very high hopes then. And that's why it's very sad when you talk to people now. And you can see the sad turn in how the hopes were dashed, in how the expectations now have turned into just a daily struggle to make ends meet, to put food on the table for their children, to give to their children an education. On average, less than 50% of Syrian refugee children are at school now. So you can see where the shift is in people's expectations and hopes from 7 years before to now.
Well, then, Rula, describe the moment when you realized or you remember that things were shifting, that the mood was changing and that these protests, peaceful in the street with a lot of hope, were taking a dark turn.
You know, I don't know if we can say there's a moment. It happened over many years. But you can see it when in the beginning of these protests, you could see people by the thousands, men and women on the streets demanding for more freedoms and democracy. And then you could see it shifting where more and more it was armed confrontation between armed groups and the government forces, and the real people were withdrawing back to their homes. But then you started seeing more foreign fighters coming in on both sides to support the government and to support the opposition. Slowly, slowly, you start seeing even with the refugees outside the country, you know, many of them, when they left their homes, they thought they'll be back soon. And 1 year after another, they started coming to this conviction that this is endless, and it's not about anymore about the goals they went out to the streets for, that it's now, this is a fight for different regional and international agendas that has nothing to do with their own goals, their own aspirations, or what they need as Syrians.
And what happened, Rula, to make largely a secular protest against corruption, against police brutality and the rest, turn into a sectarian war of the kind that we've seen in so many other places around the Middle East?
Well, I don't know if I can call it a secular protest in the beginning. I mean, in the beginning, it didn't have the sectarian tone. Syria is a regional power, and what happens in Syria affects the whole region. There are many countries, on whether those who are with the government or the opposition, have interest in what's happening in Syria and what kind of regime prevails there. And I think both sides used the most effective propaganda and rallying and mobilizing tools they have. And since people are religious in general, and since people are conservative in general in many parts of Syria, playing on the sectarian tone, playing on people's sectarian polarization, was easy to mobilize people. And I think maybe it didn't start as a sectarian protest, but then with both sides using every tool they have to mobilize people around their cause and their argument, sectarianism and religion was a major tool, and it was effective.
What do Syrians make of the outside forces that are helping to perpetuate this war?
They feel that they have no say anymore in whether this conflict goes on or doesn't go on, becomes an armed conflict, not an armed conflict. There are so many different fault lines in Syria now, and there are so many different foreign players and elements on the ground in Syria, whether they're Russians or Turks. They feel they lost control. That's what they tell us. They follow what's happening now with a sense of hopelessness and despair that, I mean, as I would tell you what UNHCR's High Commissioner said, and I think that actually captures it. And he said, you know, maybe there are no clear winners in this war, but the losers, you can see them, and they are the Syrian people.
And with so much destruction, so many Syrians having lost their lives and so many having lost their homes and fled to other parts of the world, Rula, does the issue of whether Bashar al-Assad remains president, does that even matter to most people anymore? There was so much discussion about it in the early days of this conflict, and now it seems very far beside the point.
To be honest, when I was in Syria covering this as a journalist the first few months, and then I was covering it from Beirut, and then I went back as a journalist, in the beginning, people were adamant on this goal. They wanted a change in the regime after so many months. It was clear, and they wanted a revolution. Now, when you talk to people, especially when you talk to the refugees, all they want is an end to the conflict as soon as possible. They feel that the fighting, the ongoing fighting, is futile. It's not really bringing them closer to anything. So they feel they're just paying. More people are dying. There's more destruction. Even the possibility of them returning to Syria and in safety and in dignity and being able to reestablish their lives, even that hope is diminishing. So to them, they want this to stop today before tomorrow.
Rula Amin, former journalist and senior spokesperson at the UN Refugee Agency for the Middle East and North Africa. Rula, thank you so much.
You are welcome.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.